Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg. And thanks for tuning in for our very special 100th episode. And we're very happy to have all of the listeners that have contributed and just made suggestions, asked questions, or otherwise let us know that we're listening. The rest of the team and I have enjoyed these conversations, and it's given us a chance to sit down and talk shop when otherwise we'd have to run into a chance meeting, oftentimes at a coffee shop, to do the same. Well, let me introduce the rest of the group. At this time, there's the full team is here. And Andre, why don't you say hi?
Yeah, this is Andre Kleiner, and I'd like to thank Fred for doing this recording. It's been a lot of fun. And just a quick note, I kind of both work in the industry and in academia, so I'm trying to get both perspectives on how things develop in reliability.
And Tim Rogers?
Yeah, I'll just echo what Andre said. For Brad, I really appreciate the service that you're providing to the reliability community as a whole. And I'm really glad that we've made it to 100 episodes.
Thank you, Andre and Tim, for the kind words. And Kirk Gray, I think you've pulled up a chair at the table also.
Yeah, Fred, I'd like to thank you again for arranging this and getting these podcasts out. And I've learned a lot myself from listening to the other guys here.
Thanks, Kirk. As you know, it's been a lot of fun. And Adam, I know you've joined us here at the table all the way from the East Coast.
Hey, Fred. This is so great to get to do this episode with everybody. It's going to be pretty neat. And it's amazing. We've done 100 of these so far. But that's the thing, too. The recent surge of responses, too, is really great from the listeners.
And rounding out the team is Carl Carlson. Welcome, Carl.
Yeah, hi, Fred. Thanks for putting this together, and I'm really happy to participate on this momentous occasion.
Well, welcome, everybody, and thanks for all the kind words. But I wanted to focus on, for this episode, what's coming up? What do we see coming in the future for reliability professionals? We've only been around as a profession since, say, the mid-50s, 1950s or so. There had been people working in or around or something we would call reliability engineering probably ever since there's been products produced and handed off to other people for use. But the current state is seeing a lot of interest in what we do as reliability engineers, and organizations are recognizing the value that we provide. But some of the things are changing. I think a couple of items like the Internet of Things, the decreased cost of sensors and data storage and collection and networking is impacting all kinds of different industries and in providing us a wealth of new information. We're also seeing an increased awareness, especially in consumer products, for product reliability, given the almost immediate feedback that they receive through social media. But we're also seeing an increase in the number of podcasts and books and references and resources online and offline that are available to help people learn the craft of reliability engineering, even if their title isn't a reliability professional. But we're also seeing shifts in courses and education. There hasn't been that many different education programs available for higher education. There's few programs that include reliability in the undergraduate level, but we're seeing an increase in the number of courses available online in all kinds of disciplines, and hopefully we'll see an increase in the reliability space also. Courses from edx.org or Coursera or Udemy are providing a world-class education for many people, and it's free or at very little cost. But we're also seeing an advent of the use of the internet to deliver YouTube videos and lectures and notes and seminars and webinars and so on. So there's a lot changing. There's a lot going on. And I'm curious to see how each of you are seeing the future going. And let's see where this discussion will take us. Andre, let's start with you. And because I know that you're involved with the Wiley book publisher as the editor for, I believe it's the Quality and Reliability series for that program. Curious what your take is on the future of reliability and of education.
Well, I mean, speaking of education, I kind of see, you mentioned several good trends, but I see both good trends and not so good trends. And as you mentioned before, yeah, we see there's a lot of online education and more courses available. But what I'm not seeing at the college level is more programs opening in colleges dealing with reliability. Mostly, there was a few like with Six Sigma and Greenbelt. But speaking of kind of core reliability, I'm still not seeing that. And you probably heard me complaining about this before. And like I said, I would really like to see more programs at the college level where they specifically train reliability engineers. So, and again, I probably mentioned that before, that we keep saying that reliability engineers are not trained, they are grown, because most of the people coming into reliability jobs are either MEs or EEs, electrical engineers or mechanical engineers, at least in my industry, which is mostly automotive. And again, we kind of have to train them from scratch. And that's where your help, Fred, really, really handy, because that's, I'm assuming, this is your primary audience for that. I think Adam wants to add something.
Yeah, I mean, that is such an interesting thing for us in North America. I think even more than Europe and Asia is the lack of it. You literally could list about four schools that have any kind of actual listed curriculum towards it. So the question is, if it's becoming a bigger and bigger demand within industry, you know, in North American companies, how do you get that to translate to the schools? How do they communicate that need? Has anybody seen any mechanisms there for that connection? Because so many of the companies I work with ask me, they're like, all right, we want to hire somebody, and they can't find anybody. And it's really interesting that that hasn't mechanism hasn't kicked in yet to where the universities are making curriculum.
Well, I mean, I can make a quick comment to that. I think what's the main reason we're not seeing more programs open is that mostly universities that live off the research, and in that regard, they would rather hire a professor who does something cool and new, like renewable energies or developing new kind of technologies or ICs, rather than somebody dealing with what I call dark side of engineering, basically seeing how things fail, not how they work. And I think that's where the interest of the industry and interest of academia kind of don't really match exactly.
I'm going to disagree slightly, though, because I understand what you're getting at, but I think that there are a lot of other, you know, like manufacturing and quality curriculums that are consistent throughout a lot of universities, and that is not the same kind of, you know, as you're saying, this kind of pessimistic and optimistic that, you know, if it's exciting and new, they invest in it. But if companies want it and they want that, you know, they want that education set, you know, like manufacturing and quality, which aren't as glamorous. It's just so interesting that reliability is one that is, you know, so clearly lacking. And I just wonder how we can help make that connection between this very consistent demand that we all see with companies we work with where they're looking to hire and their resource isn't there. So how do we get that message to the universities then to get them to change their curriculum? Because they would benefit greatly.
Maybe we record more podcasts with Fred.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, I agree with Adam. I think there is an opportunity here. I think universities are really looking for ways that they can interact more effectively with local businesses, not just at the local level, but at the national level. They're looking for creative ways of offering different kinds of educational content. And whether it's a certificate program or a formal degree program, I think there are some universities that are starting to consider other kinds of options. I know I teach at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and they're offering master's programs in supply chain management and data analytics. So these are not MBA programs. They're master's programs. And I believe the College of Engineering is also exploring these same kind of degree programs or certificate programs. So I think there's interest at the university level. I think the hard part is getting the getting industry, I'll put that in quotes, to be able to apply to be able to speak with one voice, you know, and basically lead the way. It may not come from one company. It may need to come from associations or trade groups instead of individual companies.
Yeah, I have a thought on this. This is Carl. I've worked with a number of universities back when I was at General Motors on our reliability engineering degree programs. And back then we had video delay. I agree with the comments and Andre's comment and others that there are too few universities that offer the full master's in reliability programs. But my comment has to do more with how we can integrate reliability, I'll call it modules, into a lot of different curricula. There's so many different programs that need to integrate reliability into those programs. And I'm thinking of design engineering, manufacturing engineering, operations, all the different programs should have modules that say, here's design engineering, and then we're going to spend the next few days or week on how you design in reliability to your products. In other words, we can, as reliability professionals, and I've talked with a number of professors about this, is provide information for them for these different programs of how to integrate reliability into the curricula. So that's the comment that I had there. I'd like to shift gears a little bit, and I have put some thought to this trends, the future of reliability, been thinking about it for a while. And one trend that has been going on for decades is designing for reliability. I mean, today we all talk about designing for reliability, but thinking back 25 years, that was not the most common phraseology. Very often reliability was assurance and testing and mathematics and statistics. And it's only in the last 20 years that it's gaining more and more recognition, the importance of designing for reliability. That's a trend that has come about because of the pressures for low cost, the pressures for fast to market. The first paper I did was in 1994. My first paper at RAMS had to do with this subject. So there's a trend that has been going on, and I think it's going to be in the future, more and more designing in reliability using the tools that we have, the science-based tools, understanding physics better, understanding modeling better in order to achieve those ends. So I'm going to turn it over to someone else at this point.
This is Adam. I think one thing that's very interesting about what you're talking about in the future is the, and Fred alluded to too, is the internet and internet sales and internet feedback and this very fast closed loop between the consumers and the manufacturers that happens now. I have a customer that they are executives. After they do a product release, they go online that evening and they look at all the comments and feedback and make a summary and send out an email to all the engineers and engineering managers who the next morning are responding to that. So if they do a product release and there's any issues or customer dissatisfaction, we're talking about a 24-hour closed loop feedback system, which is amazing. So that is a huge part of the component that makes people want to implement reliability and quality practices, where historically for executives or management to get that information from the field was very difficult if you go back 20 years. I mean, think about that process of getting a customer to even respond, even if you can get to them to tell you what they think of the product, whereas now the information is right there coming into their laptop in their home office.
Right. Adam, I agree with you that they do provide, this is Kirk, and I want to say that one of the main fundamental challenges in this field of reliability, and the most important thing that we have a challenge in getting is what makes things unreliable? What are the causes of unreliability? And sharing that information so that we can better address an approach that's effective. It's been historically, we've looked at, you know, the manuals and formulas and assumptions about the what causes failures. But if anybody, those who participated in the industry realize, in manufacturing, realize that much of the problems of unreliability or the causes of unreliability come from manufacturing, come from overlooked design, and these things are not usually disclosed in any broad sense or any way that we can all share the causes of unreliability. And without knowing the causes of unreliability, I don't see how we can develop better reliability or design for reliability. That's one of the main challenges.
Yeah, let me just add to what Kirk is saying there. This is Carl. One of the trends that I think will continue into the future is the importance of understanding the mechanisms of failure. So we can call this physics of failure. We can call it science-based failure. But the trend is using our science tools to understand how things fail and then modeling them, simulating, getting to the real root causes, and thereby being able to bring that information into the design arena. So we design for success. If we understand how things fail, we can design for success. And that's one of the integrations with reliability that I think will continue into the future.
Hey, Carl, this is Tim. Do you see developments in new technology that will make it easier for us to establish new foundations in the, you know, basic understanding of reliability?
Yeah, I do, Tim. And for some time, we've all experienced this, but for some time, the ability to use computers to model how things fail and integrate that within reliability calculations and reliability modeling, I think is improving and will continue to improve with the tools and the scientific capability and the sharing on the internet, that type of thing. So yes, I do.
I was also thinking about just the availability of data, that we have so much more data now than we ever have before. You make a good point. You make a good point about computing capabilities, but we also have a lot of data. Of course, more data doesn't always necessarily lead to more knowledge or more understanding, but that's a good point.
Yeah, it may get you more confused, actually, sometimes. Yeah. Well, this is Andre. Just speaking of the data and the new technology, as far as we're speaking of new trends, I wanted to mention prognostics. Which has a lot of applications, and I think one of them is improving reliability. And just to kind of explain what prognostics is, for people not familiar, is when we actually monitor certain parameters of the system and follow the degradation of those parameters, where we can actually predict when a system can fail. And instead of waiting for the system to fail and basically take action, and I think that's one of the very important trends for reliability engineering, where, like I said, we can monitor things and take care of a problem before it actually happened. And that's where data and access to data comes very, very handy and helpful.
I want to add also to Andre's comments that one of the things that, as we develop prognostics for the long-term wear out and degradation of a system, a lot of those same parameters that we would be monitoring can be used in accelerated stress testing and HALT type test, where you can actually do a better job of finding key parameters to watch and measure as you fatigue a product or start to add some aging to it.
Well, one of the issues I see with the advent of internal testing is that our supply chain is rapidly expanding and getting flatter and flatter. But we're also very adamant about pushing for cost reductions, and that trend just doesn't seem to want to go away. But where are the resources to figure out how does this device or this product work in my application or use area? And Tim, let's ask, you know, you're more attuned with what's going on with the supply chains and stuff. What's your take on these changes as we're expecting suppliers to provide us more detailed and useful reliability information?
No, supply chains are just going to get longer and more complex. And the other problem is that most of these suppliers do not have the kind of reliability expertise that you may have, you know, at the OEM level. So relying on the suppliers to solve or even understand reliability issues is asking a lot. Most suppliers simply don't have that horsepower.
Yet we're really relying on suppliers to have the expertise of their technology, of their processes, and we count on them.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion is that reliability is still important. Part of it is how we ask the question, how we ask or specify reliability, and set those expectations to make sure it's followed through on.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the industry, Fred, and how competitive their situation is. If they really feel that there's a competitive advantage to be gained by adding reliability expertise, then they're going to do it. But if they feel like, you know, if they feel that their customers are not really requiring that kind of input, if they feel that it's not a determining factor, you know, in choosing a supplier, then it's pretty unlikely that they're going to invest in that capacity. I mean, we've seen the same thing in quality for a long time. Reliability, you know, an even higher level of understanding of the overall system and how the part or component fits into that. So I think it's just a matter of competition. Again, if you're working in an industry, I would throw this back to Andre and ask what the situation is in the automotive industry. There's obviously a lot of competition amongst suppliers in the automotive industry.
Yeah, it's a very good topic, a very good point about the supply chain, and I can speak probably for the automotive industry where I spent most of my career. And what we see is usually tier one suppliers have about the same level of understanding and expertise in reliability and quality as OEMs, like those GMs and Toyotas. But when you go one level down, and again, this is just from the personal experience, our suppliers most of the time do not have that kind of depth and understanding. I mean, in many cases, we can ask them to do this kind of test or provide this kind of information, and they will do that. But you could tell that this is something they would not normally do in something they would typically not have an expertise, and especially when you get to the level of accelerated testing and kind of discuss certain models and how to obtain a certain type of data at the component level.
Yeah, they'll run the tests and they'll deliver the results, but they're not necessarily going to understand what it all means.
Yeah, exactly. That's been my experience, at least in automotive industry.
And again, I don't think that's going to change unless you know, buyers, the people that are looking for stuff from suppliers, unless they start, you know, calling that out. Suppliers aren't going to just do that on their own unless they see some source of competitive advantage.
And let's be fair to the suppliers too, because they have thousands of customers, and maybe for certain components, different applications for each one of those customers. And a lot of times it's maybe a design issue that they misapply that device into the circuit, and it's, you know, got a big transient or something and causes damage to it, goes back to the supplier and says, you've got a problem with your, you know, device, and it's not caused by them, but it may be caused by where it's applied in the circuit. So to be fair, they've got many different industries for many of them. And for Andre's, area, the automobile supplier, the volume, I think, would probably help, you know, the volume purchase that your companies do in the automotive industry would be a big motivation for them to put their weight behind whatever application the largest user or largest customer might have. For the smaller customers, they can't really have any. It's very difficult for them to get any specific actions.
Yeah, and they're probably not going to have a good understanding of the system that their parts or components are going into.
Well, Kurt Feiney, you mentioned the volumes and the influence, and actually, like maybe 20 years ago, automotive was a big player in the electronics industry, and they, like suppliers, IC suppliers like Motorola, so Freescale, they were listening to us very closely. But actually, I should tell you, this is not the case anymore, because now they supply more ICs to cell phone makers or some other electronic companies than automotive. So I think that's, I wouldn't call it a problem, but I think that kind of diminishing the influence of an industry with high reliability requirements like automotive, and that's why sometimes we see drop in quality and reliability of the components, because like I said, guys like us who demand high reliability no longer the key customers.
Yeah, I have a comment on this, what I'll call the ongoing competitive pressures. A trend that's not going to go away is the necessity for fast to market and the necessity for low cost, as well as the necessity for high reliability. I think as reliability professionals way into the future, thinking into the future, we have to have a dual track. One I'll call due care, meaning what are all the things that are done for all suppliers and all internal design teams that make for good reliability practices. But secondly, in parallel, we have to differentiate the most critical areas. So I'll call them critical, for lack of a better word, critical suppliers or critical parts. Complex systems obviously can have hundreds or thousands of parts and many, many suppliers and many internal decisions and designs. And we have to differentiate the most critical and apply then the vital few tools, the tools that are more time intensive and human intensive for those critical parts in order to have a highly reliable system.
Yeah, this is Adam. Yeah, what you're describing is very interesting. It's very much a part of the fundamental cultures of perception, because balancing all of those, I think so many people feel that they don't have to compromise any of those and they can go for all of them, fast time to market and, you know, new latest technology and, you know, 100% reliability. And I think we're starting to have an awakening of understanding how those balance and really picking real targets for each. And once you have targets and metrics for them, you actually can measure and adjust your program as you're going along. And that's very different than the kind of just saying we want everything right now, which usually, you know, leads to you ending up with a balance that really wasn't preferable.
Yeah, that's a great point, Adam. This brings me to a comment on reliability management. It is so important, I think, in terms of the future and where we're headed, to be able to not only understand all the tools, but to be able to know which tools are the right tools for the right program at the right time, so that we end up with the vital few tools, because resources are always in demand. We don't have all the capabilities to apply our techniques on every single component or subsystem. And so knowing how to identify the vital few tools and where to use them, to me, is a skill that'll take us way into the future.
Well, this is Andre. Just wanted to kind of maybe switch gears a little bit. And since we're on the subject of trends and the future, this is an interesting trend I noticed. And this is a trend in the automotive industry, but I would see where it would expand. It's more like kind of two contradicting trends. One is we constantly see the reliability requirements getting more and more stringent and tough. Just an example, the expected life of a vehicle in all the tests was set up, like maybe if you're looking back 30 years ago,
would be like 5 to 10 years. Then it firmly became 10 years. These days, it's pretty much 15 years a standard, and we already see the trend kind of moving towards 20-year life expectancy of a vehicle or any system in the vehicle. But at the same time, there's more and more cost pressure, and we see pretty much everything now manufactured in China or Mexico, and that actually, the cost criteria affects reliability negatively in many cases. So it's like I said, two little bit controversial trends, and that's where, again, I see that a role of reliability engineer is extremely important. So the two trends basically go together. Another interesting thing, again, it's in the automotive industry is, even though there's a kind of constant demand for reliability engineers, what I'm seeing is there's fewer and fewer kind of deep skilled people on the OEMs level. Just to give you an example, like maybe 10 years ago, if we have any dispute with like the Saabs or Toyotas or GMs of this world, my personal job would be to find a local expert and kind of settle it with their reliability experience. And once we find a solution, pretty much my job is done. What I'm seeing these days is actually I cannot find that person. And most of the time I'm dealing with a systems engineer or project manager who does not have that kind of deep skills in reliability. And they kind of trying to substitute that with certain standards or documents. And sometimes it creates difficulties and conflicts.
So it sounds like, in summary to all our comments, that the future of reliability, the future is bright and we're progressing in the right direction, but the challenges are very clear and laid out.
Yeah, I'm a negative guy today. It's good, but there's certain challenges and we need to overcome them. And I have a few more actually for the discussion.
Now, Andre, you're being very negative. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom as we look forward to reliability engineering and what we contribute to the market and to our organizations and so on. There's a lot going on, and there's good things too. So any other thoughts on that?
Oh, I'm very excited about the future of reliability. It's just I'm kind of bringing up some of the potential challenges, and I think understanding those challenges will really help us to move forward and be successful in the future.
Are there any other resources? I mean, are there any new books coming out that are good resources or helpful?
Oh, like your book?
Well done, Adam.
It's good that you mentioned that, Adam. Yeah, we both.
Yeah. Oh wow, the two books. Oh, that's really great. They're coming out.
Yes. You want to mention your book first, Adam, quickly?
Sure. It's the second edition of How Reliable Is Your Product? 50 Ways to Improve Product Reliability. And it's very much written for a broad audience, not just for, you know, deeply technical reliability people with that background. So it's meant for people with any involvement in an R&D organization, even the business side, understanding how these principles and practices fit in the culture, and a good overview of a lot of the tools that can be used in product development. So it's meant for a broad audience.
Right. And I'll be, Wiley is publishing Next Generation Halton Haas, Robust Design of Electronics and Systems, co-authored by John Paskowitz. And Andre actually wrote the foreword to the book, so we appreciate that. And that'll be coming out, be available in June. And I'm really trying to take what I learned from Greg Hobbs, the late Greg Hobbs, and push it into more applications, and especially in software, firmware, and some other issues that haven't really been, HALT has not been widely applied to.
Yeah, and it's coming out in Wiley Series in Quality and Reliability Engineering. So, yes, I was honored to write a foreword and have this book published in my series.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I know that Carl and I have been teasing people with that the idea that we're writing a book on reliability engineering management. And so let me hand off to Carl to take a look at where what your thoughts are on the trends, and maybe we could plug our book again also.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. I think the trends that that we talked about here about designing for reliability are very profound. I think they will continue. I believe the reliability engineer will be very integrated with the design engineer and the manufacturing engineer. And knowing how to design products to be robust, safe, and reliable, and thereby needing less test and fix, I think is a future that will continue. In terms of what I have going on, I'll just mention that I will be doing a tutorial at the Applied Reliability Symposium in San Diego in June on the subject of how to develop an effective reliability plan. So I hope to continue some of this discussion during that tutorial. Back to you, Fred.
Well, we do have a lot of fun at RAMS with that tutorial, and it's many of those concepts we're expanding in a course that we're working on.
Well, just a couple of comments. Since we were on the subject of trends in future, if I may, I'd like to mention maybe a few more without deep discussion. Trends, at least what I'm seeing in our industry and probably in general in reliability. One of the things is restriction of hazardous materials, which create a lot of challenges, and specifically for the whole of the electronics industry is lead-free solder, which changed the industry significantly and basically caused to change a lot of our practices, both manufacturing and testing. Another trend I wanted to mention is renewable energies and specifically wind turbines. It wasn't that new as far as reliability standpoint, but actually it brought some challenges from the cost standpoint, because probably few people realize how expensive it is to repair a wind turbine, especially offshore, and it can cost you anywhere between $500,000 and $1 million. So that's where you see the reliability of those gearboxes becomes extremely important. And from what I hear, sometimes you need to show your reliability to bankers and insurance companies so that you would actually get insured. Another interesting trend, what I observed, is another standard we call functional safety. Actually, it's a whole series of standards coming out of Europe, and they apply not only to automotive, but basically any kind of industry which deals with human safety. And this kind of regulation, it's a huge document. It's like the old version has 10 parts, and the new version has like 12 parts, where they actually describe all the processes you have to go through, and how you do the test, the design, to basically provide that safety, additional safety net for a human. And again, that also created a lot of reliability changes in many industries, because you have to do some things differently, and also it kind of I'll be a negative guy today. It actually threw some of our practices back 20 years, because now we have to do reliability prediction again. But my hope is we can do it a little bit better than we were able to do it like 20 years ago with using standards like MIL Handbook 217.
No MTBF, don't get me started.
I know.
Well, this is a good place to wrap it up. We've covered a number of different topics and a number of ideas and trends looking forward. So, Andre, how about summarizing it up, and if you can, in one sentence, that what you're excited about looking forward?
Well, yeah, that is a tough one. I think that people value reliability more and more in the industry, even though sometimes it kind of shows opposite trends, some of those I mentioned. But I think people realize that reliability is important, and things I'm specifically particularly excited is design for reliability, because like I said, going back 20, 30 years ago, we did this test, analyze, fix loops in getting design right eventually, but now we have to get it right. And that basically requires the whole team working together. Reliability engineers, design engineers, systems engineers, everybody else. I know it was more than one sentence, sorry.
Yeah, no worries. And Tim, how about the from a supply chain point of view? What's your thoughts?
The thing that I'm looking forward to the most is more modeling and simulation capabilities. I think we've been doing our best with equations and with data and collecting information from test results. But boy, it would be great if we could take a step forward to simulate or model the behavior of these different systems and feed that information to design engineers and to manufacturers to help them make better decisions going forward.
All right, Kirk, and what's your wrap up on the future trends?
I'm excited that we see much more use of finding limits, boundaries, and testing to empirical limits, and seeing what strength we have in electronics and systems in order to make a better product by building it as good as it can be. So in the restraint of cost, I think that's where we're tending to move to. Prognostics and health management is going to help us that with not only in the end of life, but in testing and better accelerated testing and monitoring. So those kinds of things I'm excited about, and especially HALT and HASS becoming a very standard term in the industry.
And thanks, Kirk. And Carl, what's your thoughts on the looking forward to the future?
Yeah, Fred, in summary, I'm really excited that reliability engineers are focusing on understanding failures better and better, and that by that understanding of how things fail, they can bring that into the design and help create designs that are robust, safe, and reliable. So that's the thing I'm most excited about.
And Adam, do you have a short summary?
Awareness.
That is short.
One word, actually.
That's I had to make up for everybody else's final thesis.
Rambling, yeah.
Well, I think we can wrap it up right there. I think beyond the one sentence, we got a fair summary of all the various topics that are on our mind. And we're also, as usual, interested in what you're thinking about. We've had so much fun putting these things together and talking shop, basically. And we've regularly invited you to join us by asking a question or providing a topic or idea. And we'd love to hear from you. We are getting some feedback, a few very positive feedback by and large, and we're looking for more topics or ideas. So if you're new to the field, what challenges are you facing? What hurdles are you facing? What would you like to know more about? And if you're experienced, what topics have tripped you up over time? And what areas would a little bit more discussion with some of your peers possibly be very helpful? Well, this show is really for you, the listeners. As much as we enjoy putting it together, it really isn't all that useful unless you listen to it and hopefully take something away from it and improve your program and your career. So thanks to everybody online to helping us put together 100 episodes, and we're looking forward to another couple hundred going forward. There certainly is plenty to talk about with reliability engineering.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.